I'm going to open the Senate Committee on Consumer Protection and Public Affairs for today, March 17th, 2009. Happy St. Patrick's Day for those of you who are celebrating. This is a room where we have a tape recording of our proceeding, and cell phones, Blackberries, those sorts of devices that are left on do interfere with the equipment. If you hear a buzzing noise, it's probably your cell phone interfering with the equipment. So if you'll turn those off, it would be appreciated. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 617 and ask Lori, our committee administrator, to summarize the bill for us, please.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 617 prohibits an insurer, a financially interested third party, from entering into a contract for motor vehicle service or repair of an insured's vehicle, and prohibits the insurer, a financially interested third party, from influencing the performance or cost of service or repair of that vehicle. It also prohibits the insurer or financially interested to third party from maintaining an office or a similar space on or within 100 feet of the premises where the insured's vehicle is serviced or repaired. It exempts the vehicle owner and owner's immediate family from those prohibitions, and it makes the violation of the prohibitions an unlawful trade practice.
Thank you so much. And we were expecting one of our esteemed representatives to come and testify, and I don't see him. So if I can get the list, we'll go ahead and start and then take his testimony when he arrives. Thank you. I'm going to start with Jim Marr, please. And Jim, did you bring anybody with you? We have a couple of seats here. I want to make sure.
Ron Reichen might be.
Okay. Jim Marr and Ron Reichen. Thank you.
Ron is on the sign-up list.
Got it. Thank you. And if you'll please state your name for the record before you begin your testimony, it will be appreciated. And one of the things that I would like to ask on behalf of the committee is, if you do have written testimony, we'd prefer that you summarize your written testimony rather than read it into the record. We do read the testimony that's provided to us. We keep it with our bills in our file. So if you'll summarize your written testimony and more speak from the heart, we sure would appreciate it. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Senator Bonamici, members of the panel. My name is Jim Marr. Certainly appreciate the opportunity to be here today in support of Senate Bill 617. This is a issue that a segment of the marketplace that is a huge area of concern to Oregon consumers, and we appreciate the legislature's assistance in strengthening consumer protection laws in recent years, most notably last session, Senate Bill 523, which signed into law and became law January 1. That bill simply required insurers to notify claimants when they had been referred to a particular repair shop, and also provided some increased consumer protection in the regards to notification. I've experienced insurance tactics that Senate Bill 617 would prohibit personally, and give you that detail in my comments. I want to spend just a little bit of time setting the stage, if I may, for the issue. Senate Bill 617 would prohibit contracts from insurance companies to body shops. Senate Bill 617 would not prevent insurers from referring claimants and or customers to particular body shops. It would not prevent insurers from doing their job, which is preparing estimates, deciding which claims are valid, which claims will be paid, providing those estimates, and working with repair shops to get consumers' cars fixed. On the national front, every state in the union practically is grappling with how to protect consumers in this segment of the marketplace. In my statement, I cite some of the more progressive consumer-friendly states as Massachusetts, Washington, Connecticut, Oregon. Depending on the particular laws of that state, efforts to control what's called steering, so anti-steering laws, or similar legislation to Senate Bill 617, which at its heart is really an anti-collusion effort. The point is, it's up to states to protect people based on the law that exists in that state. We think we've got a bill that protects insurers' rights to have contact with their customers, to provide convenience, and help people get their losses restored. There's short of someone's home, their automobile is probably their second largest investment. The amount of claims that take place in Oregon are in the hundreds of millions each year. And what we're really talking about is allowing people's cars to get fixed to the highest quality, to the letter of the law, and to give folks an opportunity to get involved in this important consumer decision. Today you're going to hear from combined dozens of years of industry professionals who are on the front lines trying to do the best they can to fix and repair to the highest quality that policies will allow folks' important investment. Today's vehicles are rolling computers. The airbags and driver stability controls are all based on the sensitivity to the exterior of the vehicle. Getting these things put back together the way the manufacturer intended is critical. It's not a cosmetic issue. And it's of great importance to the state of Oregon to protect consumers, because everybody at some level is affected when cars aren't repaired correctly, both from a consumer standpoint and the fact that it falls on society when cars are repaired incorrectly and become folks get injured at a higher level in accidents. And there's a huge amount of dollars out there that are leveraged assets that are at risk of being significantly devalued under our current system. Oregonians need help from the legislature on this one, and we thank you for your time and your interest today.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Do you want to go ahead, Mr. Ryken?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. My name is Ron Ryken. I'm here representing, and we just gave you that handout, Oregon Collision Repair Specialists. We have an endorsement from our Board of Directors in front of you. Also, I represent the collision repair industry as a 36-year veteran in the industry, and I would call upon you to really look closely at 617. Consumers truly need protection from rogue insurance carriers that partner with unscrupulous substandard repairers through backroom contracts that see the insurance carrier as their client or business partner, as opposed to the owner of the automobile. We work with database providers, the OE manufacturers, the paint manufacturers that provide all these materials that go into building an automobile. They have very definitive recommendations on how automobiles should be repaired. These contracts deviate from that, and they use it under the disguise of keeping premiums down, providing guarantees. We all understand the motive of profit. Everyone has to be profitable. But 617 really needs to go into place so that we can regulate and that we can pull this in to a branch of government where there truly can be some mandated controls. In the years that I've been in the industry, we've been down to the Department of Consumer and Business Affairs numerous times, and the results just simply aren't satisfactory. Consumers' values of their automobiles are being compromised. The safety is hugely being compromised. A lot of the technical data is being deviated from, and this is an important bill, and we certainly ask that you look at it closely and endorse it.
Thank you so much. Are there questions for this panel? Senator George?
I pay so much money to my insurance company, I feel like they're my partners, so let me argue back at you a little bit. I have a damage to my car, and...
is it a true story, Senator?
No, I'm just asking, hypothetically. If you saw my car, Madam Chair, you wouldn't worry. I don't even have coverage on it, I just have liability on it. So I have damage to my car. I take it to your shop, you give me an estimate of $5,000, I take it to another shop that offers me $2,500 for it. There doesn't see anybody, in this scenario, there doesn't see anybody worried about how much the shop charges me. So give me a scenario where this isn't just an opportunity for shops to upcharge ill-informed consumers who don't have a financial interest in the cost of repair. You see what I'm saying? I understand your argument on profit, but to me, this basically puts it in a situation where the consumer doesn't have an interest in containing costs, the insurance company who is worried about containing costs is taken out of the loop, and then the repair actually has an interest in upcharging in that situation. And so
the free enterprise system regulates that very, very closely. The competitive estimate is still very, very much alive and well. If we were gouging or overcharging, we wouldn't stay in business. It's just, you know, the economics of it just don't work that way. And we're not saying that the insurance industry can't come in and participate in that, but we're the experts, and we need to have that acknowledgement, just as your physician who would be performing any form of surgery on it would not look to the insurance carrier on how many stitches need to be put back in after they do your appendix removal. You know, we want to be acknowledged as the experts. We're trained. We continue to go on and train all the time, working with the OEs. So we're not out to gouge or to create any inflation, because the marketplace dictates that. It's very self-policing.
Go ahead. Okay, then maybe I'm reading the bill wrong. As I see line 10 through 12, it seems to say that the insurance company cannot influence, direct, or suggest to a person performing a service to alter a recommendation as to how the vehicle owner's service or repair is performed, including the cost of service of the repair. Now, I guess my point is that I would like my insurance company, especially if they get a bulk deal from a repair shop, to be able to tell me this is the best deal that we can get for you, and it'll keep your rates cheap.
Let me address that, Senator, if I may, and then sure. Ron may have some follow-up. Under Senate Bill 617, insurance companies still get involved. Nothing changes the way insurance companies go out there and protect both your claim and their assets. They write the ticket. They decide if a claim is valid, and they decide how much it's worth, how much, in effect, the claim is worth, how much will be paid to the repairer to restore the car under the policy that we're talking about. So that process still, nothing would change there. And communication between the repairer and the insurer, sometimes you get in and you tear down a car and things that couldn't be foreseen in an initial estimate come up. Mm-hmm. The communication still occurs. What would be prohibited under the bill, Senator, is in cases of referrals, where an insurance company has directed, referred, made a recommendation to a shop, the reality is shops that are getting referrals have separate contracts between the insurer and the body shop, and they're not all just bulk deals. Most of the qualifications to get on the preferred list in Oregon and every state are labor rate reductions and specific repair procedures based on the vehicle being repaired. It's that specific, and quotas dictating the particulars of part repair procedures, whether they're done or not, and that's where you get into some very safety related compromises, and not only are people's vehicles being devalued when they're not repaired correctly, but folks, that claim that is issued, it's actually your money. In your case, where you own the car and you're only carrying liability insurance, if the claim is worth $1,000, you have the option to take the money and to continue driving down the road with a ding here, assuming it's drivable, fix part of it. So that claimant is actually the person that has received the loss. And we have a third-party payer system here. You know, these programs came about nationally in the 70s. It'll make some people in this room laugh. But as a perk to all state policyholders, as a way to provide pre-screened repairs for folks to use, 40 years have passed. These programs have matured. And states are grappling with the way they work now, which are contractually agreed to reductions in labor rate and procedures. These are secret deals. The consumer cannot see the details between the insurance company who is fixing the car and the body shop that they've been sent to or just happened to find. And whether you've been referred to or not, if you find yourself in a body shop that is under the
the domain of a particular insurance company, and that insurance company is paying your claim, you are subject to the standards and practices that that insurance company has worked out with that repairer. And so what this does is allows insurance companies, so there's no constitutional issues as we see this, to operate just as they say they do, just as they always have. And this is a classic example of where we really don't need protection from the best practices in this industry, but consumers deserve protection from some of the worst practices. And articulating what would be prohibited is important because it's not there now. And the reason we have it as an unfair trade practice is to provide an enforcement tool which doesn't exist, which the Attorney General and the Consumer Fraud Division have admitted is hampering their ability to actually get involved when real cases have been brought to them. And those cases number in the dozens. So just a little background on the program before Ron had a chance to...
I'm actually okay.
No, you but I, you know, I'm speaking to the fact that there are many good insurance carriers, as there are very, very many good repairers. But there are those rogue people, and like there are in any industry, and taking advantage of. And I think the biggest thing is the lack of communication with the owner of the automobile. Who truly owns that car? You know, when I go to the when I see a physician, you know, it's my body that's being repaired. I should be able to participate and know the procedures and processes that are going on, and then make that selective choice. If I choose to have 3 stitches or if I choose to have 7 stitches, but it should be the choice, and I shouldn't have someone mandating that quality. Many of us are certified by the manufacturer. We've spent considerable dollars in investing in their equipment, following their processes, going through their training. And then when those procedures are denied and they wish to negotiate those procedures against the will of the manufacturer, which in many cases jeopardizes the warranty and the continuation of that, as well as the safety, exotic metals, new composite products that are coming out with, the collision crash testing, the use of aftermarket parts that change airbag timing, all of these things are important factors. And many insurance companies have insurance appraisers that are very qualified that have come out of the industry. We're not here to address those carriers by any means. As he addressed, we're looking for the ones that are really the ones that aren't following the law, that aren't maintaining the standards that they should.
Thank you. We have several people signed up to testify, so I just want to make sure, are there any questions for this panel? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
And next I'm going to call Fred, is it Lineco, and Jerry Richardson, please. Welcome. If you'll please state your name for the record and give us your testimony. Thank you.
I'm Jerry Richardson.
Wait till you're down by the microphone, I think.
I've never done this. I'm Jerry Richardson. I own Advanced Collision Repair in Seaside, Oregon.
Welcome.
I'm Fred Lenenko. I'm from Specialty Auto Body in Newport, Oregon.
Hey, did you decide who's going first? Doesn't matter. Go ahead.
Well, I don't want to bore you with all the details. I've been in this collision business all my life. I started out as a young man, went to trade school, and on into the repair industry. So I have a pretty wide base of what's happened over the years and working with the insurance company. Basically outline a repair here that was done is what my report's on by a previous customer. The vehicle came to us on a tow truck with the right front wheel missing. It was a full-size Tahoe. It was a previous customer. Obviously, they wanted the repair done. So what we did was we brought the vehicle in and did a disassembly on it and wrote an estimate on it to do the start the repairs. Customer came in, signed up for the job. Our initial estimate was a little over $6,000, and so the insurance company, then we ordered the parts. The insurance company came in and wrote an estimate on this, and this kind of will be a little prelude to Senator George's question. They wrote an estimate for $2,500. Now, this seems a little like we're gouging or we're doing something wrong, or, you know, this is the question that comes up with the industry. But when we looked at the difference in the estimates, what it was, first of all, their estimate wasn't comprehensive, did not include all the damage. Secondly, it included factory parts, including suspension parts. There was a drive axle tore out of this vehicle. There was a control arms tore out of the vehicle. A spindle was out of the vehicle, and it was all damaged in the accident. They had figured to use used parts off a vehicle that we had no history, not knowing anything about, from the wrecking yard. Of course, for more reasons than one, we refused to do the repair that way, and basically because of liability issues. There's no way to know what these parts were like that were coming used. For safety issues, I wouldn't want to put any of you in that vehicle and send you down the road and say, it's okay. We wrote letters to the insurance company stating that position and the consumer, and there are copies of it in here. And, of course, they said, go ahead and do the repair. The final repair bill came to a little over $7,000 with all new parts. The insurance company paid a little over $5,600 for this repair job. The insured had to pay $1,700 out of their own pocket over their deductible just to get their vehicle properly repaired. And it was their insurance company paying the bill. This is the kind of thing that we see happening regularly. When an insurance company is setting the cost of the repairs, setting the procedure of the repairs, and the type of parts that we use in a repair. And I'm all for cost savings, don't get me wrong, but cost savings need to be done in an equitable manner. And the other thing that we find is that history tells us that using DRPs, using aftermarket parts, does not reduce the cost of an average repair. It still becomes the same. What we see happening when we go back and do research, we've had to do some re-repairs on cars that were improperly repaired, and we went back and redid the jobs, is that they're charging for or overcharging in areas that they're not doing the repair on to make up for these concessions that a direct repair facility is making in the repair process. And it's become a very, very dangerous situation for the consumer who's driving a vehicle around with an improperly repaired vehicle. Basically, in a couple of things, after running my own business for over 35 years, I still have struggled with the idea that someone who is paying for the loss of a vehicle is the one that's setting the cost of that loss, rather than the carpenter or the doctor or the repair specialist in our case. I've always struggled with that. The insurance company says, this is how we're going to repair it. This is how we want to do it, because our DRP shop will do it that way for us, which, in our opinion, of course, is very, very grossly a consumer loss in both safety and in value.
Can I ask a question along the way here? I just want to make sure I understand. When you say DRP, it's direct repair?
Direct repair facility, and that's somebody that the insurance company is in contract with, as Jim had stated. They've entered into an agreement, normally with reduced rates and parts usage and procedure usages that are not necessarily the standard of the industry. Basically, we use the pre-accident condition of the vehicle as a standard. Before it was ever wrecked, the factory built it to a certain set of specifications and a certain set of quality and all the other things that went with it. That's what we use as the standard to put the vehicle back to, not what some insurance company might deem not necessary or cost effective or all any of the other things that they use. And basically what we find is that it's profitability and not cost effective. In all of the years that Allstate started the DRP many years ago, and all those years I have not seen a reduction in anybody's premium. The only thing I have seen is a lot of profitability in the insurance industry itself. So this premise that they're saving the consumer money does not wash on paper. There's no one that can, if you ask them, you say, well, why aren't you reducing your policies and to your consumers? And they'll say, well, there's a lot of fraud in the system, in your own system. So that's telling me that there's a little fraud in their system, because the repairers that enter into these agreements normally have to make a profit somehow. So what we find in the re-repair industry, we're finding that they are leaving out, admitting repairs and charging for them or overcharging for things that are so-called hidden damage. And you can't, there is no free lunch in this world, and someone has to pay for it some way, and unfortunately it becomes a consumer that's paying for it.
I'm going to ask you to wrap up so we can hear from everybody.
I won't go on.
Thank you.
I'm standing on the soapbox. I'm sorry. And I appreciate
Mr. Richardson?
Yeah, I have a over 30 years experience in this industry, and I have a little bit different twist on this. I wasn't involved in writing this bill and am new at this. And what I wanted to say when I got here was the fact that this industry has changed a lot in the last, well, quite a few years, but 5-10 years, really a lot. There's a point where the repair of a vehicle is a safety issue, and there are classes that most of us take that teach you how to do these repairs and where, how the welds are to be done and where all the repair, exactly how you're supposed to do it. The manufacturer says this is how you're supposed to do it. You'll sit in these classes with an insurance adjuster, and then when you go out into the field, they'll deny those procedures because it's company policy. I personally have some DRP arrangements, and I know that won't fare well with the OSAR group, but not all companies are bad. And I think that it should be looked at from the consumer protection point of view. Personally, what we go through is self-inflicted. We choose to be in this industry. We choose to battle with the insurance companies. So our interests really shouldn't be looked at. It should be looked at what's going on for the consumer, because they're paying for the premiums. They're paying for the coverage. And when they short the repair, the only one that profits from that is the insurance company. The consumer doesn't gain anything, because if you go in for a repair, because you asked a very good question, Senator, how come if it's one price and I can buy this for less price, for a lower price? But you have to remember, it's not like buying tennis shoes. Tennis shoes that are marketed or made in one factory on a machine that mass produces the same thing. Well, this guy buys and sells more, so you can buy that tennis shoe cheaper. And you're being programmed to look at buying insurance by the price of the premium, and what's the price, what's the price, what's the price. But our society has changed to a mass-produced type industry, and this is still a handcrafted repair. And each person that goes about doing that repair is supposed to follow specific procedures. And if you follow those procedures, the repair will be a little bit more expensive. But in the long term, it's a better value. I think that the prices should be held down, and we don't make a horrendous amount of money in our shop. We're a small shop, and we battle this all the time because we want to do things by ICAR standards, which is a training organization, and the insurance companies will deny it. And even within our DRP arrangements that we have, we won't use aftermarket parts. We won't enter into an arrangement that will they'll force you to do that kind of thing. So some of the companies, even though they push for that, we have a terrible, terrible time. They blacklist our shop. I mean, they'll send it off to a shop that will cut corners. We've had cars come into the shop that were worked in other shop, were repaired on in other shops, and they're not safe to drive. I mean, if you got in a high-speed impact, the panels that are supposed to be in the front part of the car that protect your safety were supposed to be replaced, and they're not. They were straightened because it saved the insurance company money. Well, what's the purpose in that if you have your money tied up in your car and it's your value and your asset and your safety and your family, but it saves the insurance company money, but it doesn't protect you? Then that's wrong. So I thought I should come up and talk.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Any questions for this panel? Thank you very much for being here. Next, I'm going to call Craig Campbell and Tom Gallagher, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of AAA, and we laud the approach of the bill. There is one challenge that we've discovered in looking over the language, and that is in the breadth of the scope of financial interest and who else might be included in that. And the concern we have is it will actually interrupt a program that we have that we use for our customers to actually protect them in circumstances when they're going in for automotive repair. We have a program called the Approved Auto Repair Program. This particular program, repair shops apply to AAA. They pay a fee for us to go in and do a pretty thorough investigation of their repair shop. And if they pass our rather rigorous standards, then they're identified as being a AAA-approved auto repair shop. If our AAA members get into a situation where they need a car repair, they can request a list of these auto repair shops. And if they indeed have their repairs done there, if there's any concern or complaint that that customer has, for our AAA member, we will actually work with them, with the auto repair shop, to make sure that they're satisfied with the result. The concern we have is we enter into a contract with those auto repair shops. They have very strict requirements that they have to maintain, including a 90% customer approval rating from 40 customers or more over a span of a year. They're periodically reviewed. Our goal is to have a review every month, minimum of every 90 days, and they're reevaluated every year. The fee that they pay to us does not quite cover the cost of our investigations and reevaluations, so it's not something that AAA makes any money off of, and AAA has no involvement or financial remuneration as a result of individual repairs that occur. So the way the bill is written, we're concerned it would actually prevent us in Oregon from using what's been a very successful federal program or nationwide program for AAA. The two potential ways to deal with that from our perspective is either to narrow the financial interest term or make a narrow exception for automobile clubs providing membership services or something along those lines. And with that, I can answer any questions you may have about that.
Thank you. I have a question. How many shops are on the approved auto repair program?
That I don't know, but I could get you a list of not only the amount but the shops themselves if you'd like me to.
I'm just curious about whether it's, you know, 3 or 300.
Unfortunately, it's the one thing I didn't ask our folks. I do, however, have a very nice manual that tells me everything else
about
the program.
Thank you very much. Mr. Gallagher.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Tom Gallagher representing the Oregon Auto Dealers. I think my concern is the same as Section 2 language on 5 and 6, any person with a financial interest. In very rare circumstances, that auto companies will, dealers, will be a creditor or a lien holder on a retail installment contract. And those situations on a repossessed car or something like that where we may be involved directly in getting it fixed, and we're also financially benefiting from that. My solution to that either is to find out what any other person who has a financial interest, what that intends to refer to, or take that language out, or put in another exemption down on line 16 that would leave out retail lien holders on retail investment contracts. So just a case of, I think we just got a little overly broad. We are not the insurer, and we're not interested in selecting repair shops for purposes of directing the business in one place or another to save money.
Thank you, and I'll probably ask you to work with the proponents of the bill. Any questions for this panel? Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, I have, I'm trying to group people together here, Randy Daigle and Chris McMurray, please. Welcome. If you'll start by saying your name for the record, please, and you can decide who goes first.
My name is Chris McMurray, and I'm a consumer that had a problem with an insurance company.
And do you want to tell us what happened?
Yes, forgive me, a little cold.
Sure.
Well, thank you first for the opportunity to testify before you today. I'm here in support of Senate Bill 617. I feel that this is a good bill, and I'm convinced that if this would have been the law when I had my accident, that I would have it would have helped me with a lot of trouble I had with my insurance company and the body shop that I dealt with. excuse me. Oregonians need increased protection from the current system, where the insurance companies, they have a huge influence over these body shops and the repairs that are on our cars. And I experienced that firsthand with my vehicle. I'm here today to share my story with the hope that lawmakers agree that Oregonians deserve further protection when they find themselves trying to get a vehicle repaired after a motor vehicle accident. The whole repair started when I was involved in an accident. I was stopped at a light, and I was hit by two vehicles. My truck got pretty good damage. I had the airbags deployed, and my whole cab was filled with glass, and I injured my neck and my back. I reported it to my insurance company, and they agreed to take the claim, and they were going to be reimbursed by the other insurance company. But they directed me to their repair shop. And so, to make a long story short, when I went to pick up my vehicle, I could immediately tell that there was lots of problems. There were parts missing, antenna missing, trim pieces, lots of safety features like my seat belts didn't work correctly. And it was ignored by the shop. They said, well, we'll fix this, and they didn't come around to fix it. I complained many times to the body shop, the owners of the body shop, and they directed me to the insurance company, said they've done everything they were supposed to do, and it was up to the insurance company to make that decision, whether or not they fix these things. When I went to my insurance company, they told me the same thing. They said, we've done everything we're supposed to, and that's it. But I didn't give up. I wanted my vehicle fixed right, and I wanted things to be done safely and properly because my children ride in the vehicle with me, my family, and their safety was at risk. So I paid an independent inspector to come look at my vehicle, and they found that there's shoddy work done, incomplete work. There was actually fraudulent work done compared to the estimate that I had received from the actual work. And many things that never even got touched on my vehicle. So, including seat belts, some of the, like the frame damaged my vehicle. There are many things on the list that didn't get done right. And so once I had that evidence, I went back to GEICO, and I got a hold of the president of their claims division. And I called him every day, every hour on the hour for 90 days until he responded, and finally he started receiving my letters and decided that he would send someone to come reinspect my vehicle. And until they actually saw that I had this evidence in hand and that they were in the wrong and that they should have re-repaired my vehicle and that I could prove that there was fraud, that's when they became very helpful, and they begged me many times to remove my vehicle from the shop that it was at, to have it taken to one of their preferred shops to be worked on. And they gladly agreed to pay me nearly three times the amount for the vehicle, which they had already settled the claim, if I only allowed them to give them the vehicle again. So after 18 months of fighting to get my vehicle done right and to have to move on with this, I had to get on with my life. So I needed a working vehicle again, and I settled my claim. GEICO took my alleged repaired truck, declared it a total loss, and paid me off. I bought a new truck with the money that they gave me. But now, looking back, I honestly think that if I would have pursued it more and fought harder, that it would have brought some of this stuff to light. It would have revealed the deceitful practice of the insurance companies, where they're making deals with these body shops and calling the shots on what gets repaired on your vehicle and what doesn't. And
Mr. McMillan, if I can ask you to sort of summarize up it and finish up, because...
I'm sorry, Senator, I'm almost
okay,
finished.
Okay, great, thanks. I want to hear from everybody. Thank you.
I think that if this bill would have been in place, that a lot of this stuff wouldn't have been a problem. The problem is this isn't just happening to me. It's happening to many people in Oregon, and I think that this will help save those people that aren't able to speak up and take the time to step up and talk to these companies and be as persistent as I was with this. I just urge that you support this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll hear from Mr. Daigle, correctly, and then we'll take questions.
Thank you, Senator Bonamici.
That's right.
Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Randy Daigle. I own Lentz Body Shop in Portland, Oregon. My company's been in business 40 years. I've been there, since 1978, forever it seems like. I'm also the secretary of the organ collision repair specialist, and I also brought a letter from the Oregon Independent Dealers Association because they support this legislation. One I want to share just briefly is two or three things. You have my testimony, but what I've seen happen in the trade, and there are a lot of good insurance companies. I am not anti-insurance. I want them to make as much money as they can. They've got liability and cost for you, for me, for their responsibilities. Flip side, I have seen these DRP, quote-unquote, direct repair programs. As you see, some people call them dictating repulsive protocol. And I'll tell you why. I have some DRPs. I'm forced to because just about every insurance company out there is forcing that on the industry. There are good and there are bad. There are companies like State Farm that are at the top of the list, and there are other companies that I don't want to name that are at the very bottom. I've had adjusters stand at my desk and say, don't put that cost on that repair. Don't add this seat belt. Don't add, shortchange that airbag. Don't repair this, and I no longer do business on a DRP relationship with those companies. I have seen companies take and put these programs together, and they limit the amount of shops that can get involved. Now, it's not like an HMO, where an HMO hears a standard and the doctors can apply. The insurance company dictates one company has only 8 shops that they'll work with, and in order to do work with that, they have to agree to do that or work within those restrictions and guidelines. I had one of these shops call me one day and says, what do you think about this? And he's telling me this story, and it almost mirrors what you're saying. And I said, well, what happened? He says, well, 80% of my business is with Geico. I had a problem where they wouldn't pay me to repair this car properly. So the customer had a noise, and he's driving it down the road, and he finally brings it to another shop, and they find out what he's got wrong. Could have killed him. Geico went back to that shop and said, you'll buy that car from that customer, or you'll never see another job from us. Well, what's that shop to do? So I asked that owner, I said, what'd you do with that car? He says, I wrote a check, I bought it. I said, well, you fixed it, right? Nah, I just wholesaled it. I'll let the next customer go down the road at 60, 70 miles an hour and the wheel's going to fall off? That's what's happening behind the door, behind these programs. Not all body shops are good. Not all are bad. Not all insurance companies are good. Not all are bad. Most of them do the fair thing. But one thing I do want to bring up, and you'll see in my testimony, when you've got 8 or in Portland metropolitan area, there's plus or minus 275, maybe 300 body shops. When you have an insurance company that sticks and sits down and they only allow 8 or 10 or 20 body shops to participate in this, they bring those 20 body shops into their office. And I've been there with one company where they said, you will agree to shortchange this, this, and this, right? You will agree not to charge for this, right? And the consumer's the one that takes it in the end. Well, that's what I asked. I raised my hand in that meeting. I said, ladies and gentlemen, insurance adjusters, I have a concern here of antitrust. Insurance companies are exempt from antitrust, but these 20 body shops or 10 body shops in here, we are not. And I said, what you're asking us to do is federal and state antitrust, and I'm uncomfortable with this, and I'm leaving. And my manager and I left, and guess what? My volume of business with that plummeted. They blackballed me. Because I stood up for the consumer, because I stood up for what was legally right, and that's what's happening in the trade, and there's a real division out there. So there are some problems. I've had similar stories, and I'll wrap it up shortly. I've had customers or insurance companies mandate use suspension parts on cars from a different year, make, and model. And when I refused, because I called my insurance agent, I said, am I covered under my garage keeper's liability for this? Absolutely not. My own insurance company won't even guarantee it, and another company's trying to force me, and this was on a claimant, another guy's insurance. They ended up, it took them 4 or 5 weeks to get their car repaired because the insurance kept saying, I'm not paying any more than this, and on and on and on. And then they said, well, we'll have one of our DRP shops do it. Well, who will do that? We're not telling you. But they're going to send somebody to tow it out of my facility. And I'll wrap it up with this. Think of Portland Adventist Hospital, and you've got 100 doctors right around there. What if the insurance company said to every one of you that you have something wrong with your health, that you're only allowed to go to 5 of those doctors who will set the rates, and in return, they're reducing the care, and then after you get their estimate, then you go to your doctor and he says, I can't fix it, you for this. What are you going to do? What's the consumer to do? Most of them are terrified of their insurance. I have customers every day. Well, gosh, if I file a claim, they're going to drop me or I'll never get insurance again. There's a real stigma out there. There's a real fear. And sometimes I'm fearful of it also. Senator George, you made a good point on who controls the cost. We are controlled by the manuals. We are controlled by the labor, the prevailing labor rates, in the same fashion and manner that if a plumber, electrician, or attorney, or anybody else got out of control, pretty soon they're going to get sued for overcharging, or the word's going to get out on to them. Yeah, there needs to be some control. I agree with you, and I think that control's already there.
Thank you for your testimony. You. Questions for this panel? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next, I'm going to have a panel. We have three chairs there. Great. Sean Miller, Steve Patterson, and Brian Miller, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Sean Miller, I'm here today on behalf of the Property Casualty Insurers Association in opposition to Senate Bill 617. I want to talk a little bit about and just kind of take a step back look at last session. The 2007 legislature approved Senate Bill 523. And this committee, chaired by Senator Brzezinski, we worked pretty much all session to come up with a consensus bill that did two things, and I want to talk a little bit about that. It essentially required the insurers to inform the insureds prior to the recommendations of an auto repair recommending an auto repair facility that the insured has the right to choose any repair shop, and the insurer may not require any specific shop be used. So it was a steering issue where you educated, obviously, the insured on their choices and what their what the law provides them, and that is a choice to go wherever they choose. Under the same law, an insurer may not limit payment for repairs necessary to return the motor vehicle to a pre-loss condition relative to safety, function, and appearance. That's in ORS 746-280. Again, our concerns with this particular bill is it's far overreaching. I think some of the discussion that's already taken place is we are working with an unregulated industry, and I think the passage of Senate Bill 617 will lead to less choice, higher costs for the consumer, and puts quality, competition, and consumer convenience at risk. According to J.D. Power and Associates, consumers who take their vehicles to a direct repair program facility are more satisfied than those who use a body shop without a referral or recommendation. That is because insurers insist not only on fair pricing for DRP shops, but also quality repairs, which are guaranteed by the insurer, often for as long as the claimant owns the vehicle. Senate Bill 617 threatens the competition and threatens the quality and safety of auto repair. Within Senate Bill 617, insurers would be prohibited from entering into contracts with anyone performing service or repair for vehicle owners. The language is so broad, it could be interpreted to eliminate direct repair programs, glass networks, even rental car agreements that allow insurers to negotiate based on volume in order to keep repairs and rental costs low. The bill bans the fairly common practice of having a workspace and a repair facility set aside for convenient drive-in appraisals. Some shops cater to consumers by making it a convenient place to meet with their agent, company representative, or adjusters to settle the claim and get repairs underway. I do want to comment on a previous witness who talked about that they feel that the free enterprise system in these shops will control themselves if you pass Senate Bill 617. And I just want to remind you that with an unregulated industry that we're working within, by passing 617, you're actually eliminating free enterprise because these are contractual arrangements, again, to control cost and to guarantee quality for the consumer. And so I think and I would argue that this does the opposite effect for controlling those costs, and we would urge the committee to take no action on Senate Bill 617. And again, we took and addressed this issue last session, and I'll conclude my remarks there and turn it over to the rest of the panel. Thank you.
Thank you, and we'll hear from the whole panel, and then we'll take questions.
Thank you. Hi. Senator Bonamici and members of the Consumer Protection and Public Affairs Committee, for the record, my name is Brian Miller, here today on behalf of Farmers Insurance Group. And thank you for the opportunity to comment on Senate Bill 617. Farmers Insurance is quick to emphasize that a customer or claimant is free to choose the shop of their choice to repair their vehicle, and we provide each of them with a written document detailing their right to choose, a right that was reinforced in 2007 by the passage of Senate Bill 523, as Mr. Miller commented. We also believe that customers benefit from the ability to make informed choices, and I would encourage the committee to only consider legislation that affirms this benefit. I would like to focus my testimony today on the benefits that customers currently receive under today's law, benefits that exist because of an insurer's ability to engage in direct repair relationships with members of the collision repair industry. First and foremost, claims handled through a direct repair process offer the customer the greatest level of convenience. They eliminate the need for a consumer to get multiple estimates for the damage on their vehicle. They often don't require that a company adjuster be involved. We give that responsibility to the body shop in those situations. In our experience, the car is typically returned to a customer nearly 3 days sooner four vehicles handled through our direct repair programs than those that are not. And finally, the repairs receive a lifetime guarantee for quality and workmanship as long as that customer owns that vehicle. In the absence of any regulatory oversight of the auto collision repair industry, our direct repair program also ensures that shops have equipment that allows for the repair of complex accident damage. They provide for continuing education for all employees involved in the repair process. They require that shops provide a high level of customer service as measured by independent third parties. And finally, they require that shops maintain all applicable licenses and insurance. In conclusion, it's Farmers' position that having direct repair programs available to customers and to claimants is beneficial both to our customers and to the body repair industry. That concludes my testimony, and after Mr. Patterson speaks, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Steve Patterson. I'm Vice President and General Counsel with Oregon Mutual Insurance Company, located in McMinnville. Oregon Mutual is a property and casualty insurer that provides coverage for people's homes and cars and businesses in five states, but we're located here in Oregon, and we service that with Oregon employees. I want to talk about this bill for some of the same reasons, but on a different level. Oregon Mutual has direct repair relationships, but we don't have written contracts. But we do have agreements with repair shops and communities. One of the great things that happened in the last session's bill was that you didn't take away our right to help provide customer service for our customers. When they call and ask after an accident, and often it's the first one they've been in, they have questions about, what do I do next? Where do I take my car? And we preserved in that bill last session the ability, after we tell them they can take it anywhere, to say, if you need a recommendation, there are some shops we've worked with before. And to ask them, would it be more convenient for you to get it repaired closer to where you work or closer to your home? And in essence, Oregon Mutual, who doesn't have large market share and the ability to go in and wrest concessions, and we don't ask for it, we got into this kind of service because customers demand it. They want the ability for us to send it to a local body shop and not have to wait for us to hire an appraiser or send an appraiser out to look at damage that the body shop is able to do that we trust. So we think that we're in this relationship with these fine body shops, and most of them are fine. I hear testimony about Senate Bill 617 is designed not to take care of the good actors but the bad actors in the insurance industry. I think if it's passed, it's going to open the door for the bad actors in the auto repair industry. Most of them are good. But we provide, through our reinspection programs with people we have relationships with, the ability to check and make sure. You heard about the things that they said, no, you weren't going to repair. I don't know that that's true or not true. But I do know there are also instances where things are on repair sheets that weren't done, or there are back panels that are being repaired on estimates that were part of an accident. Those kind of checks that we do help make this a more consumer-friendly operation. And Ori Mutual is a mutual insurance company. That means all this money they say we're generating profits with inures to the benefit and the protection of our policyholders. And so we're looking for ways to hold down these costs just like we would any cost, because we have a responsibility to make sure that we can provide the coverages that repair cars at a reasonable price to consumers. We want to be competitive in the marketplace. And I would say this for myself and my colleagues on the stand here, even the body shops, nobody makes money cheating customers. And that's certainly not the point of these arrangements. And I would say that for those reasons, I'm happy to answer any questions, but I will conclude my testimony other than to say the breadth of this bill does give me some concern. When it says enter a contract with a person performing service, they're talking about us or our independent agents who might suggest a repair facility or tell people what they might want to look for or questions that they might want to ask. If they get involved with the repair shop, does that mean we can't have a contract? When I was in law school, a contract is an offer, the acceptance of it, and something of value. What we ask of the repair shops that do business with us is not concessions on price or the use of particular types of product or parts. We ask that they're going to have a clean place for our people to sit, that they're going to have equipment that's adequate to do the repairs, so they're going to give a guarantee for the life of the car. They're going to provide friendly customer service, and what we get in return is happy customers, and everybody wins in that situation. So the fact that they're talking about any contracts concerns me there. And then Section B, I think, is a big one. Influence, direct, or suggest to a person performing. They said that's not going to, the proponent said that's not going to change the way we do business, but I don't know how it can't. We send appraisers or adjusters out to look at damage on cars that we haven't seen that we've gotten a bill on. We need to be able to ask questions, compare damage to reports of the accident, to use education we have to ask if that's the best way to make sure that the safety is repaired, or if they're using the right parts, or so I'm concerned that we get involved with telling us we can't go out and have interaction with body repair shops. That is the customer protection, that there are two sides that want to get that car repaired safely and economically.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for this panel?
A quick one.
Senator George?
Sean, in your testimony, you said, according to J.D. Power and Associates, consumers who take their vehicles to a direct repair program facilities are more satisfied than those who use a body shop without a referral or recommendation. Can you drop by my office that J.D. Power and Associates report? I find that to be kind of a key thing.
Yeah, Madam Chair,
I'd like to know what consumers, I understand the kind of debate going on in this room right now, but I'd like to know what consumers are on this thing, and that would be helpful.
Madam Chair, Senators, I'll drop by that report, and I'll also drop by the very low complaints in this area to the Insurance Division as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much. And I want to note for the record that Mr. Campbell was very quick in finding out this information. As of today, there are 223 AAA approved auto repair shops in Oregon. So, let you know that. Next, I have I'm going to call Don Braden. And also, I know I'm not sure you're together here, but Daryl Fuller. I'm trying to have panels that are similar, so doing my best. Okay.
Great job.
if you don't know before. Want to go ahead?
Yep. I'm Don Braden. I'm the president of Cadell's Auto Body. Cadell's Auto Body was founded in 1954. We operate 12 locations, 10 in Oregon. All of our locations are ICAR certified, and 9 of the 10 in Oregon are EcoBusiness certified. We've already talked about the fact that it's an unregulated industry. Some of the people from the insurance industry, it's unregulated. One of the things that happens under a DRP program, there's about a dozen different things that we have to comply with to be on a DRP program. Cadell's is on about 26 different DRP programs, so we're fairly knowledgeable about the way they work. They all require that we have a minimum amount of equipment and that our people are certified, that we have drug testing programs, and that we basically operate a business. We've been around for over 50 years, so we're not doing shoddy repairs. That does not happen. As far as the influence that the insurance companies have on the way we do our repairs, basically what they're asking is, I have never been in a situation in any of our shops where an insurance company has asked us to use an unsafe part. I don't know where you could buy a used airbag. We don't do that kind of thing. We have the liability, should we do that, make an unsafe repair. I've seen a number of repairs that were unsafe. We even have a form that the customer has to sign if his car was unsafely repaired, and he doesn't want us to repair it back to the standard that it should be, because we don't want to be liable for it. We show them what the problem is. We explain it to them, but it's in most... Those repairs weren't done by DRP shops. They were done down an alley somewhere, and not by competent repair facilities. As far as what happens with the DRP program, most DRP programs don't focus on severity. What they focus on is customer service. We subscribe to an independent survey. We supply a file to the independent group, CSI Complete. They survey all of our customers, or try to survey all of our customers. They provide that information to us and to the insurance company. If our customer satisfaction falls below a certain level, we'll be taken off the program. As a matter of fact, in the last few years, severity is usually, in some cases, it's not discussed at all, and in other cases, it's way down the list. But we're looking at customer service. Was the customer happy? Did we do a quality repair? They also focus on cycle time. How long did it take to get the car repaired? Did the car sit in our back lot for 2 weeks before we started repairing? One of the things that people like is they want their car repaired, they want it returned to pre-accident condition, and they want it done as quickly as reasonable. So cycle time and customer service are the things that are really important. Another way that you can get kicked off a DRP program, the insurance companies have inspectors. Some of the insurance companies actually go out to the consumer's home and inspect the car. They take our bill, and they go out and they look at the car. If we are found to bill for work that's not performed, we'll be removed from the program. If we commit fraud, they'll kick us off the program. So those re-inspections, I think, are very important. They also come into our shops and look at what's being done as we do it. Yes, on occasion, they come in and we discuss the repair methodology that's going to be used. We've trained people. We have an expert on frame alignments. They'll come in and look at it and determine whether or not it's a repairable car. Usually on a frame, it's a replacement of the frame. We talk about how that's going to be done. We're not doing shoddy repairs. We wouldn't have been here for 50 years if we have. We're certified, ICAR Gold in all of our shops. We're EcoBiz certified, and we're doing a quality job for a consumer at a reasonable price, and we do a lot of return business. That's all I have.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Fuller.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Darrell Fuller. I represent the Northwest Auto Trades Association. NATA is the association that represents both collision and mechanical repair shops in the state of Oregon. And we worked very closely on the bill last session and are proud of the work that was done last session. We have members that are on both sides of this issue, so I'm here firmly in favor of whatever happens. one of the great things about being a lobbyist, we have members of our association who wouldn't touch a DRP program with a 10-foot pole. We have members that wish they could be part of a DRP program. We have members that are in a DRP program that wish they weren't, wish their business model would allow them not to have a DRP program. But what I do offer is our association with national organizations and the ability to answer questions, not immediately, but if you have any, in terms of the depth and scope of how states are dealing with this issue, I'd be happy to provide you with any research that you might want as you look through the testimony on both sides of this issue, and if we can be helpful, we'd be glad to do that.
I appreciate that, Mr. Fuller. Do you happen to know if other states have taken that approach anticipated by, by this bill, or do other states take the approach of the 2007 bill?
Madam Chair, I don't have the statistics with me. I would be willing to bet that if you recalled Mr. Maher, he might have the numbers with him. I do know that there are states that prohibit direct repair programs, and that there are states that don't regulate them at all, and that there are states that are in the middle. But in terms of the specific numbers, I don't have them. If Mr. Maher doesn't, I'd be happy to get them for you.
Okay, so they vary in other words. Right. Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Senator George.
Thank you. Daryl, also the same question I asked. If you have any data at all about how consumers rate the two experiences with the DRP program, I would really appreciate that, because I want to know exactly what the consumer's reaction is rather than body shops and insurance companies. Those two opinions don't really matter to me. I really want to know what the consumers are feeling once they go through the process. So if you have any data on that, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. I'll see what I can find for you and get back to you quickly.
I have one more. Any other questions? I have one more panel to call. I have four people, and I'm going to get you all up here at the same time. Daryl Burkhart, Jerry Geisler, Eric Frawley, and Leif
Hansen,
please. Can you just pull another chair up here? We've done this before. It'll be cozy, but go ahead. I'll have you start over.
Okay, thank you. My name is Daryl Burkhart. I have a auto collision center in Gresham, Oregon, and I've been serving the community for 26 years in my business. Thank you for taking the time to listen to me today. I know you've heard from other people, and you got an understanding of what we're here for today. One thing I really would like to encourage is for each and every one of you to really look into this deeply and do your own research to come up with your own analogy of what we're talking about here. In respect to contracts with insurance companies and body shops, I've got an agreement with a certain insurance company, and that insurance company asks for nothing more than quality, convenience, and service for my customer. And that's all I've ever modeled my business after for 26 years is the consumer, and that is my greatest concern. My reason for opposing contracts and my willingness to get up here and jeopardize the contract I have now is what it does how it hurts the consumer is the business owner when he's contracted with these organizations looks at the repair totally differently. I can't look at the repair no longer on the consumer standpoint. I have to look at the repair in respect of what the guidelines I have to meet now for the insurance companies to remain in my contractual agreement with the insurance company. So it changes my repair process completely. I want to repair the vehicle back to pre-accident condition for the consumer. When I'm engaged in a contract with an insurance company that dictates how I repair it, then it doesn't allow me to no longer look at it in that light. I wanted to mention in respect to controlling the cost, I want to make sure you folks realize that there's four major database companies that provide us, along with the insurance company, computer software to write estimates with. So you can go anywhere and get an estimate, and typically they'll be within $20 to $30 of each other, because the computer database knows the amount of time it takes to perform the operations on the car other than judgment items. And a judgment item would be, if you looked at a dent, how long my judgment would be to repair just the dent, as opposed to somebody else's judgment. So there's very little difference in our estimates when the software is used correctly. So that alone can prevent any type of inflated estimating to be done if we were no longer bound with contracts. The agreement that I'm in with this company now works great. This company monitors me against other body shops in the area and the industry to make sure that I'm prevailing. And what I mean by that is that my rate is prevailing, because that's what we work on, in case you're not aware of that. We work under a prevailing rate where the insurance company surveys all the shops, and then they come up with an average rate, and that's what we work under. So we don't get to just set that rate. It is prevailing. So the companies do have the ability to monitor whether or not we're fair in our estimates, whether the repairs are done correctly. Like that last gentleman said, they go out and review them. So I'm not opposed to working business-to-business relationship with insurance companies, but the contracts just change the aspect of how I focus on the repairs, because now I'm bound to repair it based on stipulations they put in place in the contract. And then I wanted to add to the part about the insurance companies having estimating centers in body shops that they're contracted with. I want you to realize what happens when a vehicle comes to my facility for an estimate. To properly write an estimate, I have to wash the car, photograph it, dismantle it to do a thorough and accurate estimate. When a consumer calls an insurance company and they're forced to go over here for an estimate for the reason that it's going to make it faster if our company sees it, that's really polluting the whole process, because once that person goes there and gets that estimate's incomplete. So now they come back to my facility where I have to dismantle the car, write an accurate estimate, and then invite the insurance company out for a reinspection, which all could have been done in the initial beginning when the vehicle's dropped off. Dismantle the car, invite the insurance company to come out and write a thorough and accurate estimate. Now the process is done twice. The consumer suffers additional costs in rental and additional costs in time running it to this location. I've made it simpler on the customer by just having them drop it off, and I myself transport it to those facilities to try and help my consumer in getting their vehicle repaired correctly. So I just want to encourage that you really look deeply into the matter that we're here to discuss, to focus your own opinion. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Ron, go ahead, please.
Hi, my name is Jerry Geisler. I also own a collision repair facility. I've been in the industry since I was 15 years old. The last 30 years, I've operated my own repair facility. And I have to mirror the comments from Daryl. We both work for that same company that he was talking about. They're very good to work with, because the idea is to make the consumer happy and to post-inspect repairs. They don't let anybody know whose car they're going to go look at. They just show up. They will call these people, make an appointment with them, and they will thoroughly look over their repair to make sure that they paid for exactly what was done to the vehicle and that the repairs were done correctly with appearance, fit, and finish. So that is the correct system to work under. And I feel all insurance companies, DRP or not DRP, should have these reinspection programs. It's a very good way to monitor that the cars are being repaired the way they were supposed to be and that they paid for what they actually got done. I would like to elaborate a little more. The gentleman that talked about how the consumer had to pay extra for his repair. I go to the Collision Industry Conference several times a year. That is a conference that's made up of repairers, database providers, and insurance companies, and among others in our industry. And I ran into a young man from California who has a repair facility, and he related to me that the only jobs that he will take are direct repair program jobs. And I said, well, now why would you do that? He said, because we know exactly what we're going to do for that repair for that company. And I said, so do you ever run into anything that you know isn't going to be paid for? And he said, yes, we run into that all the time. He said, we simply tell the customer that on this job they have a copay that is beyond their deductible. I says, well, how can you do that? And he says, well, I simply tell him when you go to the doctor, you have a copay. So when you pick up your car today, you're going to have a copay, and this is beyond your deductible. I really, practices like that are very eye-opening and just absolutely wrong. I would never engage in a practice like that, because the repair is supposed to be indemnified by the insurer. It is not supposed to be repaired beyond the deductible by the car owner. I do also have just a quick testimony that I will just drop with you folks. That is from a former shop owner that explains his experience of why he's no longer in the industry, and it all relates to direction of work. And I won't even read that. I'll just pass that, and you can read it yourselves. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you for your testimony.
Hi, my name is Eric Frawley. I'm auto body tech. I've been in the industry for some 30-odd years. A portion of that has been working for the direct repair facilities, and it has been my experience that under that, it kind of made it difficult for me to find out where my allegiance was because, I mean, as we know and as the testimony has stated, that because of the computer databases, the prices are pretty much, it's pretty easy to come up with what a repair would cost for, you know, or an assortment of repairs, as well as with the price for materials. But where I was having a hard time with was with actual procedures itself. I felt like I was having, well, it'd be like an insurance agent or somebody telling a doctor how to repair a vehicle. So I was put in a spot to where I wasn't getting what I needed to fix the car right. So my concern obviously is going to be able to feed my family. And in that, I had to compromise on repairs. To do that, I ended up not working in that particular portion of the automotive industry anymore just because of that particular factor. If a vehicle needs to be, let's say a structural member needs to be replaced or even a mechanical component or something like that, a technician should make that call. And then as far as some of the things that had happened in the direct repair facility itself, the audits that, and I don't know if it's the exact same thing that's been referred to up here, but the shop that I was at being audited, they would actually bring as soon as I started getting the proper procedures done on these vehicles, they would come back in and they would audit and they would find little things. There's always, you know, $10-$15 part, or you know, there could very well be. And after finding these things, they would put the shop under a probationary period. And during that time, because they have open-ended books, they can pretty much audit it about any time they want. But during that particular time, the managers and the owners of the shops were too concerned or too afraid to ask for supplements on cars because of being on probation. They didn't want to get kicked off the program. So I was not allowed to ask for the proper procedures and the proper parts to fix these cars. So it kind of put me at a disadvantage, and like I said, it kind of made it hard for me to feel comfortable in that particular kind of setup. A lot of times there were, let's say, there's multiple estimates wrote on vehicles. There's a preliminary, and then when we start to get into a vehicle or when there's a teardown done, there's always additionals found. And under the direct repair facility type of program, a lot of times we have kind of a close-your-mouth attitude, whereas, you know, we just need to get this done and fix it. Whereas, let's say, the organization I'm with now, where we do have supplements, it's unfortunate that that it has to work that way, but it does. Each car does have additionals. And by not being on a DRP, it can actually delay our repair processes for, you know, another week or so on a particular vehicle waiting for that, because we're not a DRP. We kind of go at the back of the list. But since I'm not in that portion, I'm still in a repair facility, but because I do not work for a DRP now, even the vehicles that I do see that come in, there are, if they've been worked on before, there's quite a few that are substandard. And, you know, that leaves me to where I have to document it, and then sometimes even the customers got back involved to find out liability issues when it comes to that. But I'd have to say the amount of vehicles that had been worked on before, about 90% of them, when it comes to safety, either safety or corrosion protection, have not been brought up to particular standards. And if it is a safety issue, then, yeah, we have to readdress it.
But, thank you. And if I could ask you to wrap up your testimony.
Okay.
Any closing comments? All right. Mr. Hanson? Hinson. Sorry.
Thanks. Now, I've written a speech here. Everybody covered it. I don't really have much more to say. Something that Sean Miller said about 523 going into effect 2 years ago.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Leif Hanson.
Thank you.
I'm the owner of Leif's Auto Collision Centers in Portland, Oregon. We have 7 shops. I've been in the business about 35 years. I am a certified technician. I work from the ground up and have 68 employees working for me. We process about 5,000 repairs a year. And we are not a DRP. Before I get into this, and I'll make this brief, I know we're getting running late, something that Sean Miller stated about Senate Bill, or that 523, which became law 2 years ago. The problem with 523 is twofold. One, the insurance companies don't follow it, because the insurance commissioner won't enforce it. And number two, there's a little clause at the very end, except if the policy of the company is not to follow the law, follow this bill. And so they've used that to not pay for proper repairs. They've used that to not pay for proper rates. They've used that for not to cover things the way they're supposed to be covering things. That being said, the 3 points of this bill are, the first, that we shouldn't have contracts between the insurance companies and the body shops. And what we've seen over the years is that these contracts, in and as themselves, create an ability for insurance companies to squeeze certain shops to do less than quality work. And I'm known in the Northwest as a very large re-repairer. I've re-repaired hundreds of vehicles from these shops. We see thousands of these vehicles come in from other shops that are repaired poorly, and the repairs we've done have gotten so big at some points that dozens of these vehicles have had to be bought back by the insurance companies because their initial repair was so poor that it could not be repaired correctly the second time. And this is not from all insurance companies. It's like many of my colleagues and other people have said, there are good insurance companies out there, State Farm probably being the pinnacle right now, of doing the right thing at all times. 10 years ago, they weren't like that. They are like that now. They do the right thing, and they are the standard in the industry. The body shops have rated State Farm as an A in their list of shops, I mean, list of insurance companies, whereas other Progressive, Geico, Safeco, those are rated as D because of the predatory practices that they impose on the shops that are within their programs. And so what this bill, what we're saying by eliminating the contracts is stopping these certain insurance companies from taking the money that out of the repair process for profit. And the second part about this is having the no influence over the shop in the way the shop writes the bill or the cost. That is set up, and we ask for this for the sheer purpose that the insurance company shouldn't be allowed to come into a body shop and dictate to the experts that have the training, have the expertise on the method to repair a vehicle. Now, again, State Farm walks into my body shop. They're there 8 hours a day, two guys. They have 10 to 15 claims a day they work on in our shop. They never dictate to us how to repair the vehicle. But if I was to turn around and say, look, I want to, their going rate is $50 an hour. I'm going to start charging $100 an hour. They would say, no, the rate is 50. They are not influencing the way I perform the repair or my cost, but at the same time, I am not trying to go above the prevailing rate or go outside of the database that the insurance company and my body shop share that dictates the exact to the tenth of an hour what it costs to repair a vehicle. And so what we're asking is to stop the insurance companies that are not doing the right thing from having this influence over shops where they feel obligated to cut the repair, do a poor repair, just so they won't get blacklisted or get kicked off a program. The third part of the bill is that the shops that have drive-in claim centers within the shop. These drive-in claim centers are set up for one purpose only. And they can say it's for customer service, but it's for one purpose only. Or actually, we could say two purposes. It's to get a check into the insurer's or the claimant's hand. That is traditionally, according to CIC, which is the industry conference, which is chaired by body shops and insurance companies, 100% below what the actual cost is. 30% of people that go to the driving claim centers put the check in their pocket and don't get their car repaired. The insurance companies know that they can get away with paying half the cost of what they owe by getting into the drive-in claim centers. The second reason for this is that by having them in a drive-in claim center, it gives their DRP, which is at that same location, this collusion together with the insurance company to keep that person there at the shop. And when people say it's more convenient, well, for those people that want to exercise their freedom of choice to take it to my shop, the insurance company will say, you must come to our driving claim center first, then you can go to Leif's shop. But then when you go to Leif's shop, the insurance adjuster has to come out to my shop anyway. So that makes double duty and actually delays the repair. If they come to my shop first, it actually speeds up the process. In closing, I got four pages here. I'm going to go through it.
If you could give us a copy of that, that would be
great. Sure. I got some scribbles on it. I'll get you a copy of it. You know, in closing, the insurance companies are saying it's going to drive up claims costs, it's going to drive up premiums, it's going to lower customer service. Well, body shops as an industry, just like every other small business industry or big, is responsible for their own customer service. I'm responsible for my customers, and I'm responsible for making sure my customers are happy. I'm almost ashamed to hear other shops say, well, I think that I need the insurance company to take care of my customer service. I need to take care of my customer service. That's what I do as a company. But from the cost standpoint, $440 billion was spent on premiums in America for the property and casualty industry. Over $2 billion was written in premiums that were paid by Oregonians here for automotive insurance alone. Our entire industry, according to the auto body business in 2007, was a little under $200 million. That's less than 4% of the $2 billion, or no, 10%? Something like that, 10%. 10% of the $2 billion brought in was paid out to our industry. In 2007, the insurance industry posted across the board, according to AB Best and Company, a 15% average profit. That meant that on the automotive line in Oregon, the insurance industry as a whole posted $300 billion in profits. That's 1.5 times more than they paid out for the entire auto body industry to fix cars. So if by some chance that from 15%, they had to pay like another $20 million to ensure that airbags went in correctly, airbag sensors were replaced, seatbelts were inspected, corrosion protection was done, new suspensions were put on, brakes were fixed, shocks were put on, glass was put in correctly, structural members were replaced instead of repaired when they should have been according to the manufacturer, new rims were put on instead of aftermarket rims. The list goes on and on and on about these little things that cut into the proper repair. If it went up $20 million or 10%, I think that the insurance industry could live with a smaller profit of 0.4%. So instead of 15% profit, maybe like all of us are squeezing our belts right now, they could go down to 14.6% profit. Just put it in perspective, the average body shop has a profit of about 6%. That's all I have. Thank you very much.
I have a question. You said that you're not a DRP.
No.
And I wondered if you could just explain, did you just decide that wasn't your business practice and you weren't going to become a DRP, or did you just say no to the insurance companies that ask you to? How did that come about?
I'll make it real brief. 1994, Farmers rolled out the big DRPs with computers. Allstate had a DRP since the 70s. With computers, everybody started rolling out a DRP because the computers allowed people to communicate, and you could write the database on computer and send it. It wasn't handwritten anymore. It's easier to compile numbers and figure out who's charging what. Farmers was the first major company to roll out a DRP. I got on the Farmers program. Within 6 months, I took myself off the program because they started asking me to do things I shouldn't have done. I remember the day it happened because they asked me to cut a core support in half and put in half a core support. The core support is a structural unit that needs to be put in as a unit. They asked me to cut it in half, weld half of it in. You don't do that. I realized at this time that they were going to hold me hostage and allow, if I created a business model around them, I would be beholden to these insurance companies for my bread and butter. 5 people in this state control over 60% of the work that goes to body shops. 5 insurance companies, 5 regional managers. They control all the work. And if I had 5 individuals controlling over 50% of my work, if I got one mad, I could lose 10%, 15% of my work. If I got 3 men, I could lose 50% of my work. And I just chose at that point that I didn't want to be controlled by an insurance company that had the power to kick me off the program if I didn't cut a corner here or repair a rail when I should have replaced it or not write down or inspect the seat belts as required by the manufacturers. And to this day, you'll never find on a DRP estimate a line item that says inspect seatbelts, even though it's required by the majority of the manufacturers anytime a person's wearing a seatbelt in an accident. They won't write it down, they won't do it. And when we write it down, we get a lot of flack. Even though they end up paying for it, they give us a lot of grief. You shouldn't charge for that. That's not right. Nobody else charges for that. I mean, this list goes on. I have 30 things here that they routinely deny the DRPs, and it's just become a bigger and bigger problem. This year or last year, auto body business, 68%, 64% of DRP shops don't want DRPs across America. 88% of non-DRP shops don't want DRPs. For the DRPs, back in 2003, only 34% of DRP shops didn't want DRPs. In the last 5 years, because of the squeezing that's been going on, that has jumped to 64%. And I can get that stat for you, too.
Thank you for your testimony. Okay. Any questions for this panel? Thank you very much for your testimony. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 617. I know we'll be getting some more information as has been requested. And I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 386 and ask our committee administrator if you will explain, please, the Dash 2 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'd be happy to. You should each have, members, the proposed amendments to Senate Bill 386. They're Dash 2s. You'll have, it's Senator Ruther's one right up there. There should be, if you don't have your other copy. And there's some clarification. The amendments, the effect of these amendments, essentially, there's a clarification of definition of debt collector and debtor, as you see at the top, and then the substantive changes. One is a removal of the provision that extends the statute of limitations, and the second substantive change is a removal of the provision allowing a debtor counterclaim after the statute of limitations has run. And you do have fiscal and revenue in front of you as well on the Dash 2s.
Thank you. And I will entertain a motion to adopt the Dash 2 amendment.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated 22509 to Senate Bill 386.
Senator Rosenbaum moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 386. Is there any discussion? No, I just want to explain that this is a bill with my name on it, and I talked to some people about it and wanted to make this amendment to address some concerns, and so I'm putting this forward and adopting it at this time, unless there's any objection. Any objection? Okay, we're adopting the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 386, and I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 386 for today. And we are adjourned. Thank you very much.
That kind of cleans the room.
Yeah, no,
all of a sudden.